Hello everybody, once again welcome to my channel, How the Billionaire CEO of SpaceX and Tesla is Shaping Our Future by Ashley Vins. Episode 9, Part 2, Liftoff. Dealing with especially aggressive schedules and Musk's expectation has required SpaceX engineers to develop a variety of survival techniques. Musk often asks for highly detailed proportions for how projects will be accomplished. The employees have learned never to break the time needed to accomplish something down into the months or weeks. Musk wants day by day and hour by hour forecasts and sometimes even minutes by minutes countdowns and the fall from missed schedules in stroke. You have to put it when you will go to the bathroom, Borden said. I am like Elon sometimes. People need to take a long dump. SpaceX top managers work together to, in essence, create a fixed schedules that they know will please Musk, but that are basically impossible to achieve. This will not be such a horrible situation if the targets were kept internal. Musk, however, didn't tend to go to these fixed schedules to customer unintentionally, giving them false hope, typically. It falls to Gwynne Shotwell, SpaceX president, to clean up the resulting mess. She will either need to ring up a customer to give them a more realistic timeline or a Concota limiting of excuses to explain away the inevitable delays. A poor Gwynne, Morgan said, just to hear her on the phone with the customer is agonizing. There can be no question that Musk has mastered the art of getting the most out of his employees, interviewing 3 dozens SpaceX engineers, and each of one of them will have picked up on a managerial nuancing that Musk has used to get people to meet his deadlines. One example for a problem where a typical manager may set the deadline for the employee. Musk guides his engineers into taking ownership of their own delivery dates. He does not say, you have to do that, you have to do this by Friday at 2 p.m., Borden said. He says, I need the impossible done by the Friday at 2 p.m. Can you do it? Then, when you say yes, you are not working hard because he told you to. You are working hard for yourself. It's a distinction you can feel. You have signed up to do your own work, and by recruiting hundreds of bright, self-motivated people, SpaceX has maximized the power of the individual. One person putting in the 16-hour day ends up by being much more effective than 2 people working 8 hours a day together. The individual does not have to hold meetings, reach a consensus, or bring other people up to speed on a project. He just keeps working and working and working. The other SpaceX employees, someone like Steve Davis, the director of the advanced projects at SpaceX. He's been working 16-hour day every day for years. Bronson. He gets more done than 11 people working together. Define Davis. Musk called the teaching assistant in Stanford Aeronautics Department and asked him if there were any hardworking bright masters and doctoral candidates who did not have families. The TA pointed Musk to Davis, who was pursuing a master's degree in aerospace engineering to add 2 degrees in finance, mechanical engineering, and practical physics. Musk called Davis on Wednesday and offered him a job following Friday. Davis was 22nd SpaceX hire and has ended up the 12th most senior person still at the company. He turned 35 in 2014. Davis did his tour of duty in quads and considered it the greatest time of his life. Every night he could either sleep by the rocket in the tent shelter where the geckos crawled all over you, or take this 1 hour boat ride that made you seasick back to the main island, he said. Every night you had to pick the pain that you remember at least. You got so hot and exhausted, it was amazing. It was just amazing. After working on the Falcon 1, Davis moved to the Falcon 9 and the Dragon. The Dragon capsule took SpaceX 4 years to design. It's likely the fastest project of its ilk done in the history of the aerospace industry. The project started with Merck and a handful of engineers, most of them under 30 years old, and picked 100 people. Quantum Note, according to the Merck, the early Dragon Falcon version 1, work was just me and maybe 3 or 4 engineers, as we were living hand to mouth and had no idea if NASA would ever us to contract. Technically, there was a Magic Dragon before that, which was much simpler as it had no NASA requirements. Magic Dragon was just me and some high altitude balloon guy in the UK. Okay. They creeped from past capsule work and read over every paper published by NASA and other aeronautics bodies around the project, like Gemini and Apollo. If you go search for something like Apollo or Reentry Guidance Algorithm, there are these great database that will just spit out the answer, they say. The engineers at SpaceX then had to figure out how to advance these past efforts and bring the capsule into the modern age. Some of the areas of improvement were obvious and easily accomplished, while others required more ingenuity. Saturn V and Apollo had colossal computing base that produced only a fraction of the computer horsepower that can be achieved today on, say, an iPad. SpaceX engineers knew that could save a lot of room by cutting out some of the computers while also adding capabilities with their more powerful equipment. The engineers decided that while the Dragon would look a lot like a bow, it would have steeper wall angles to clear the space for gear and for the aeronauts that the company hoped to fly. SpaceX also got the recipe for its hot heat shield material, called PICA, through a deal with NASA. The SpaceX engineers found out how to make the PICA material less expensively and improve the underlying recipe so that Dragon, from day one, could withstand the heat of re-entry coming back from Mars. Point to be noted, NASA researchers studying the Dragon design have noticed several features on the capsule that appear to have been purpose-built for that to go to accommodate a landing on Mars. They have published a couple of papers explaining how it will be feasible for NASA to fund mission to Mars, in which a Dragon capsule picks up samples and returns from them to Earth. The total cost of the Dragon came in $300 million, which will be on the order of 10 to 30 times less than the capsule projects built by the other companies. The metal comes in, we roll it up, weld it, and make it things, David said. We build almost everything in the house. That is why the cost have came down. Davis, like Borgen and plenty of other SpaceX engineers, has had more hopes for seemingly impossible. This travel request dates back to 2004. SpaceX needed to accuter that will trigger the gimbal action used to steer the upper stage of Falcon 1. Davis had never built a piece of hardware before in his life, and naturally ran out to find some suppliers who could make an electromechanical actuator for him. He got a good back for $120,000, he long laughed. David said, he said, that part is no more complicated than a garage door opener. Your budget is $5,000 to make it work. Davis spent 9 months building the actuator. At the end of the process, he toiled for 3 hours, writing an email to Mox covering the pros and cons of the device. The email ran into the gory detail about how Davis had designed the part, why he had made various choices, and what its cost would be. As he pressed hand, Davis felt anxiety surge through his body, knowing that he had given his all for the almost a year to do something an engineer at another aerospace company would not even attempt. Marks rewarded all of this thought and angst with one of his standard responses. He wrote back, "Okay, the equator Davis design ended up costing of $3,900 and few weeks Falcon 1 into space. I put every ounce of intellectual capital I had into that email, and 1 minute later got the simple responses." Davis said, "Everyone in the company was having that same experiences. One of my favorite things about Elon is his ability to make enormous decisions very quickly. That is still how it works today. Kevin Ruston can attest to that. He arrived at SpaceX in 2008 after spending 24 years at NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Ruston worked on a wide variety of projects at JPL, including the building and testing computing system that could withstand and harsh the condition of space. JPL would typically buy expensive, specially toughened computers, and this frustrated Ruston. He daydreamed about ways to handcraft much cheaper, equally effective computers. While having this job interview with Musk, Ruston learned that SpaceX needed just this type of thinking. Musk wanted the bulk of a rocket's computing systems to cost no more than $10,000. It was an insane figure by the aerospace industry standards, where the avionics system for a rocket typically costs well over $10 million. In traditional aerospace, it could cost you more than $10,000 just for the food at a meeting to discuss the cost of the avionics," Ruston said. During the job interview, Ruston promised Marks that he could do the improbable and deliver the $10,000 avionics system. He began working on making computers for Dragon right after being hired. The first system was called CUCU, pronounced CUCKUO. This communication block will go inside the International Space Station and communicate back with Dragon. A number of people at NASA referred to the SpaceX engineers as the guys in the garage, and were cynical about the startup's ability to do much of anything, including the building this type of machine. But SpaceX produced the communication computer in record time, and it ended up as the first system of its kind to pass NASA protocol test on the first try. NASA officials were forced to say cuckoo over and over again during meetings, a small act of defense SpaceX had planned all along to torture NASA. As the months went on, Ruston and other engineers built out the complete computing system for Dragon and then adopted the technology for Falcon 9. The result was a fully redundant avionics platform that used to mix up the shelf computing gear and product built in-house by SpaceX. It cost a bit more than $10,000, but came close to meeting Musk's goals. SpaceX reinvigorated Ruston, who had become disenchanted with JPL's acceptance of wasteful spending and bureaucracy. Musk had a sign of on every expenditure over $10,000. It was his money that were spending, and he was keeping an eye on it, and as he damn well should, Wilson said. He made sure nothing stupid was happening. Decisions were made quickly during the weekly meetings, and the entire company bought into them. It was amazing how fast people led up to what came out of those meetings, Wilson said. The entire ship could turn 90 degrees. Intentionally, Lockheed Martin could never do anything like that, Wilson continued. Elon is brilliant. He's involved in just about everything. He understands everything. If he asks you a question, you learn very quickly not to go give him a gut reaction. He wants answers that get down to the fundamental law of physics. One thing he understands really well is the physics of the rocket. He understands that like nobody else. The stuff I have seen him to do in his head is crazy. He can get in discussion about flying a satellite and whether we can make the right orbit and deliver Dragon at the same time and solve all the questions in real time. It's amazing to watch the amount of knowledge he has accumulated over the years. I don't want to be the person who ever has to compete with Elon. You might as well leave the business and find something else fun to do. He will outmaneuver you, outthink you, and out-execute you. One of the Wilson's top discoveries at SpaceX was the test bed on the third floor on the Hawthorne factory. SpaceX had tested versions of all the hardware and electronics that go into the rocket laid out on metal tables. Each has in effect replicated an inert of a rocket and end-to-end in order to run thousands of flight simulations. Someone launches the rocket from a computer, and then every piece of mechanical and computing hardware is monitored with sensors. An engineer can tell a valve to open, then check to see if it opened, how quickly it opened, and the leap of current running into it. The sensing apparatus lets SpaceX engineers practice ahead of launches and figure out how they will deal with the manner of anomalies during the actual flight. SpaceX has people in the test facility who can replicate errors and see on Falcon or Dragon to make adjustments. Accordingly, SpaceX has made numerous changes on the fly with the system. In one case, someone spotted an error in the software while in the hour right before launch. SpaceX engineers have changed the file, checked how it affected the test hardware, and when no problems were detected, send the file to the Falcon 9 waiting to the launch pad, all in less than 30 minutes. NASA was not used to this, Wilson said. If something went wrong with the shuttle, everyone was just resigned to waiting 3 weeks before they could try a launch again. From time to time, Musk will send out an email to the entire company to enforce a new policy or let them know about something that's bothering him. One of the most famous emails arrived in May 2010 with the subject, the line, "Acronyms seriously suck." There's a creeping tendency to use made-up acronyms at SpaceX. Excessive use of made-up acronyms is a significant impediment to communication and keeping communication good as we grow incredibly important. Individually, a few acronyms here and there may not seem so bad, but if 1,000 people are making this up over time, the result will be a huge glossary that we have to issue a new employees. No one can actually remember all these acronyms, and people don't want to seem dumb. in a meeting, so they just sit there in ignorance. So this is the perfect of on new employees. The needs that needs to stop immediately, or I will take the drastic action. I have given enough warnings over the years. Unless an ergonomics is approved by me, it will not enter this basic glossary. If there is an existing ergonomic that cannot reasonably be justified, it should be eliminated as I have requested in the past. For example, there should be no HDS, horizontal desk stand, or VTS, vertical desk stand, designation for desk stands. Those are particularly dumb as they contain unnecessary rules. A stand and our test site is obviously our test stand. VTS3 is for celebrities compared with tripod, which is two so that bloody acronym version actually takes longer to save that the name. The key test for economy is to ask whether it helps or hurts communication. An economy that most engineers outside SpaceX already know, such a GUI, is fine to use. It is also okay to make up a few economic contractions every now and again, assuming I have approved them. Example, MVAC and M9 instead of merely 1C vacuum or merely 1C C label, but those need to be kept on to a minimum. These were the classic mocks. The email is rough in its tone and yet not really unwarranted for a guy who just wants things done in as effectively as possible. It obsesses over something that other people might find trivial, and yet he has a definite point. It's comical in that Marx wants all economic approvals to run directly through him, but that's entirely in keeping with the hands-on management style that has mainly worked well at both SpaceX and Tesla. Employees have since dubbed the economic policy the SS rule. The guiding principle at SpaceX is to embrace your work and get stuff done. People who wait guidance or detailed instruction language. The same goes for the workers who craft feedback, and the absolute worst things that someone can do in is inform Marks that what he's asking is impossible. An employee could be telling Marks that there's no way to get cost on something like the accutator down to where he wants it, or that there is simply not enough time to build a part of by Marks' deadline. Along will say, fine, you're off the project, and I am now the CEO of the project, and I will do your job, and be CEO of two companies at the same time. I will deliver it, brother said. What's crazy is that Elon actually does it. Every time he's fired someone and taken their job, he's delivered on whatever the project was. It is jarring for the both parties when the SpaceX culture rubs against more bureaucratic bodies like NASA, the US Air Force, and the Federal Aviation Administration. For the first inklings of these difficulties appeared in cars, then there were the government officials sometimes questioned what they saw at SpaceX cavalier approach to the launch process. There were times when SpaceX would want to make a change on its launch procedures, and any such change would require a pile of paperwork. SpaceX, for example, would have written down all the steps needed to replace filter, put on the gloves, wear safety goggles, remove a nut, and then want to alter this procedure or use a different type of filter. The FAA will need to review the new processes before the SpaceX could actually go about changing the filter on the rocket, a lag that both the engineers and Marks found ridiculous. On one occasion, after this type of things happened, Marks slid into an FAA official's ride and while on conference call with members of SpaceX teams in NASA. I got hot and heated, and he reiterated this guy on the proposal level on like 10 minutes, Morgan said. Merck did not recall this incident, but did remember other confrontation with the PFAA. One time he come to like a list of things an FFA subordinate had said during the meeting that Merck's oversee and send the list along to the guy's boss, and then his dingbat manager sent me this long email about how he had been in the shadow program and in the charge of 20 charges or something like that, and how dare I say that the older guy was more wrong, Merck said. I told him, not only he's wrong and let me re-articulate reasons, but you are wrong and let me articulate the reasons. I don't think he sent me another email after that. We are trying to have a really big impact on space industry. If the rules are such that you can't make progress, then you have to fight the rules. There's a fundamental problem with regulators. If a regulator agrees to change a rule and something bad happens, they could easily lose their career. Whereas if they change the rule and something good happens, they don't even get an reward. So it's very asymmetric. It's then very easy to understand why regulator is changing the rules. It's because there's a big punishment on one side and no reward on the other. How would any rational person behave in such a scenario? In the middle of 2009, SpaceX hired Ken Borsok, a former astronaut, as its vice president of aeronaut safety and mission assurances. Borsok fit the mold of recruit priced by a classic big aerospace company. He had a degree in aerospace engineering from the U.S. Naval Academy and had been a test pilot in the Air Force and flew on Space Shuttle a handful of times. Many people within SpaceX saw his arrival at the company as a good thing. He was considered a diligent, dignified sort who provided a second set of eyes to many of SpaceX producers, checking to make sure the company went about things in a safe, standardized manner. Borsok ended up smack in the middle of the constant pull and push at SpaceX, been doing things efficiently and agonizing over traditional procedures. He and Merck were increasingly at odds at months past, and Borsok started to feel as if his opinions were being ignored. Giving one incident in particular a part made it all the way to test stand with major flaw, described by one engineer as the equivalent of the coffee cup not having a bottom instead of being caught at this factory. According to the observers, Borsok argued that SpaceX could go back to investigate the processes that led to the mistake and fix its root cause. Monks has already decided that he knew that the basis of problem and dismissed Borsok after a couple of years on the job. Borsok declined to speak on the record about his time at SpaceX. A number of people inside SpaceX saw the Borsok incident as an example of Monks' hot charging manner, undermining some much needed processes. Monks had a totally different take on the situation, casting Borsok as not being up to the engineering demands at SpaceX. A handful of high-ranking government officials gave me their candid takes on notes, albeit without being willing to put their names onto the remarks. For one found Mark's treatment of Air Force generals and military men of similar rank appealing. Musk has been known to let even a high-ranking official have it when he thinks they are off base, and he's not apologetic about this. Another will not believe it when Musk will call very intelligent people idiots. Imagine the worst possible way that could come out and it would come out. We are the post-disposition. Life with the lawn is like being in a very intimate married couple. He can be so gentle and loyal and then really hard on people when he said it's not necessary. One for more official fellow Mox will need to temper himself better in the years to come in SpaceX was to give Korean favor with the military and government agencies in its bid to defeat the incumbent contractors. His biggest enemy will be himself and the way he treats people, disposes himself. When Mox rubs outsiders the wrong way, Shotwell is often there to try to smooth over the situation. Like Mox, she has a salty tongue and a fiery personality, but Shotwell is willing to play the role of the counselor. These skills have allowed her to handle day-to-day cooperation at SpaceX, leading Mox to focus on the company's overall strategy, the product design, marketing, and motivating employees. Like all of Mox, the most trusted lieutenants, Shotwell, have been willing to stay largely in the background to do her work and focus on the company's cause. Shotwell grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, the daughter of an artist mom and a neurosurgeon dad. She played the part of a bright, pretty girl, getting straight A's at school and joining the cheerleading squad. Shotwell had not expressed a major inclination toward the science and knew only one version of an engineer, the guy who drives a train. But there were clues that she was weird, but different. She was the daughter of who moved and Luan and helped put the family basketball hoop together in the third grade. Shotwell developed a brief interest in car engines, and her mom bought a book detailing how they work. Later, in the high school, Shotwell's mom forced her to attend a lecture at the Illinois Institute of Technology on a Saturday afternoon. As Shotwell listened to one of the panels, she grew enamored with the 50-year-old mechanical engineer. She had these beautiful clothes, this suit and shoes that I loved, Shotwell said. She was tall and carried off the heels really well. Shotwell chatted with the engineer of the talk, learning about the jar job. That was the day I decided to become the mechanical engineer, she said. Shotwell went on to receive an undergraduate degree in mechanical engineering and master's degree in applied mathematics from Northern University. Then she took a job at J. Chrysler. It was a type of management training program meant for hotshot recent graduates who appeared to have little leadership potential. Shotwell started outgoing to the auto mechanics school. I love that. And then from department to department. While working on engine research, Shotwell found that there were two very expensive great supercomputers sitting idle because none of the veterans knew how to use them. A short one later, she logged onto the computers and set them to run computational fluid dynamics or CFD operation to simulate the performances of valves and other components. The work kept Shotwell interested, but the environment started to grate on her. There were rules for everything, including lots of union regulations around who could operate certain mechanics. I picked up a tool once and got written up, she said. I opened a bottle of liquid nitrogen and got written up. I started thinking that the job was not what I had anticipated it would be. Shotwell pulled out obviously Chrysler training program, regrouped at home, and then briefly pursued her doctorate in applied mathematics. While back on Northern campus, one of our professors mentioned an opportunity at the Aerospace Corporation, anything but a household name. Aerospace Corporation has been a headquarter in El Segundo since 1960, serving as a kind of neutral nonprofit organization that advises the year post NASA and other federal bodies on space programs. The company has a bureaucratic feel, but has proved very useful over the years, which its research activates an ability to champion and champion and the next costly endeavors. Hey guys, thank you for being with me. See you in the next part 3, episode 9.